Hello, everybody. Jace here. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and I have a bit of news before we get to the actual episode. I'm actually going to be playing an old Webtoon Wednesday, a classic or a flashback, if you will, with Rachel Smy about the Alora Olympus, which is probably one of the top two or three Webtoon strips out there. It's a gorgeous strip, really fun story, highly recommend it, especially if you have any interest at all in old Greek mythology and tales of gods and things like that. But part of the reason I'm playing a classic episode is there have been some changes over at Webtoon in terms of personnel, just like apparently every other comic publisher and entertainment company these days. So things are kind of in flux. It's a bit up in the air. I hope to continue the relationship with Webtoon and continue to do Webtoon Wednesdays. I know a lot of you that tune in every week, aspiring creators, hoping to get stuff out there on Webtoon yourselves or creating things for the Discover side, the Canvas side, as it's called now, really enjoy Webtoon. I get a lot of great feedback about Webtoon Wednesdays, and so I definitely want to keep the spotlight on the platform because I feel it's worthwhile. I feel like we have some really great dialogue with the creators who come on, and I want to keep doing it, but unfortunately, it's not up to me. I'm sort of reliant on Webtoon because you know, they're the ones that have the connections to these creators. So I'm going to continue it if I can. As I said, things are in flux. I have been in communication with somebody over there, but the person that I dealt with on a weekly basis to get these things set up, as I said, is no longer with the company. So I'll play a couple of what I feel are the best interviews that we did in regards to Webtoon and Webtoon strips over the next couple of weeks as kind of a flashback, and hope that we can get back on track with Webtoon. And if not, I may try to reach out to creators myself to see if I can keep it going that way. But it would be much more of a challenge. So anyway, for now, we'll replay a couple of great interviews, as I said, and hopefully we'll be able to get back on track with the normal Webtoon Wednesdays and new content for you all. So appreciate everyone listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time. Welcome to another Webtoons Wednesday. I have another amazing Webtoons creator joining me today. We're gonna talk about her title, Alora Olympus. It's Rachel Smythe. Rachel, thank you for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I've really been enjoying discovering the world of Alora Olympus, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I always like to ask people when they first come on kind of about their history with comics. Did you grow up reading them, American comics, all that? You're not from America, so what's your history? Give us your background.
All right. So I'm fairly lucky in terms of like visual media because both of my parents love to read, and they love to read everything. So my home was just like, it's just books everywhere, like all the time. So I think my earliest comic I remember partaking in would probably have to be Asterix and Obelix. So that sort of thing. And I remember my dad used to read it to me when I was very little. There was that, and there's also like a lot of like high fantasy art books around that were sort of like geared towards like the 70s and 80s, so that kind of like content. Sort of like growing older, I would say I really liked what did I like at the time? So sort of prior, like I mean, obviously, like I'd already sort of seen like anime and things like that on TV, but I hadn't actually had any access to manga until a bit later, obviously, because I live in New Zealand, so what you get is limited.
Right.
But prior to looking at manga and enjoying that, I liked Bone, which is like that series about that little white dude, What else? I started, because I went and looked through the questions beforehand, and I was like, I wonder if I could like track down any of the titles that I really enjoyed. And I've just got a list here. Some of them I couldn't find, and they're just like weird memories. But there was one called like Magic, which I believe was like a graphic novel, and another one called Witches that I can't for the life of me work out who wrote them or illustrated them. A lot of them were like Scholastic. Do you remember like Scholastic things? And you could like order them through your school. I think there was one about like a teenage vampire, of course, that I really enjoyed, which is a very distant memory. And then after that, obviously, I realized that manga was a thing, and I was like, yes! And I got onto that because obviously it has a lot of components or tropes that like Western media doesn't offer, especially geared towards like female audiences at that particular time in my life. So yeah, let's say that's the scoop. That's like my main history.
So yeah, so sounds pretty eclectic, and that's interesting. Bone, that's a title that I'm hearing more and more. This new generation of creators, especially creators from outside the United States, that they discovered early on. So I find that so interesting that Bone seems to be the one connecting thread from so many different creators. That's really, really
cool. Interesting. I think maybe it has something to do with accessibility,
right?
Because I remember there just being a lot of it. Not to say that it's only like positive was that there was a lot of it, but like I used to go to like the public library a lot when I was little, and they had what is referred to as like the graphic novel section. Mm-hmm. And so they had this binder that you could go look at. It had like all the covers like scanned and photocopied into the binder, and you would pick out titles based off the cover because you couldn't actually have the actual graphic novels because people would pinch them.
Right.
But yeah, I remember there was just a lot of Bone available, and I think like the main protagonist besides the little white dude was a girl. So I was like, oh, a girl for me to relate to. How fantastic.
Now, at what point did you start thinking, well, this is what I'm going to do for a living. Maybe I'm going to create comics. Maybe I'm going to become a comics pro. Was that something early on, or did it come later?
I feel like it was more of an up and down process rather than a like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it. And now I've done it. Sort of a linear situation. It was more like, I think, perhaps like in high school, it's like, I really enjoy art. I really enjoy, telling stories. I enjoy entertaining people and sharing my perspectives using these tools that I have. But obviously, you know, well, I don't want to say like, this is the rule and this is what happens, but like, it's quite difficult to make like a living from making comics, obviously. It's very difficult. It's very competitive. So I believe like it was something I wanted to do. However, I wasn't like, this is going to be my bread and butter.
Right.
And like, I was, you know, it was like my fun hobby, and I was like, yeah, I enjoy this and I do it occasionally. And also, especially early on in my creative career, I found it very difficult to finish projects, and I think everyone can relate to that. Like, you kind of start heaps of them and leave them by like the wayside, and I just had such an issue with like finishing shit. It's unbelievable. So yeah, there was that. But yeah, I studied graphic design. I was like, yes, I'm going to be a graphic designer or an illustrator, what have you. And I went to school for that, and, you know, I've like had my whole working career. Like, I've come into, like, obviously, like, I'm lucky enough to make Lore Olympus as my income at the moment, but it hasn't always been this way. It's been like a really long road to get there, and I've had lots of different types of jobs.
Now,
so I think, you know, it's a misconception that this is what I have always done. It's just something that I've been like lucky enough to kind of fall into at this stage. Like, if I had told myself, like, this time last year that I would have been able to, like, do this for my full-time job, I would have laughed in my own face.
Yeah, it's a constant process, and as a freelancer, you can never get too comfortable, because as quick as it comes...
Oh, no, you can't. People are always like, what are you going to do after Lore Olympus? And I'm like, I'm going to be sending chapters to my editor on my fucking deathbed. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and have you published any previous work? Is there anything else that our listeners may want to go dig up and find, you know, some other titles that you've worked on in the past that maybe they may even be familiar with?
Okay, so I'm like terribly embarrassed by any of my old work, but obviously I should give it credit because it's kind of been like my ladder rungs to getting where I am now. Like, even like the earlier chapters of Lore Olympus, like I look at them and I'm like, why did you do that? But I think that's good though. You should feel that way about your work to a certain extent because it shows improvement.
Right.
But one of my prior works, it's also on Webtoon, but I haven't updated it since, like, I don't know, like 2016, because I didn't know what I was doing, was the Dr. Foxglove Show, which is a black and white comic with a neo-Victorian setting about a female doctor.
Interesting. I'll have to go and track that one down myself. Yeah, you got me.
There isn't that much there.
You got me. Well, let's shift gears here and talk specifically about Lore Olympus, really popular title on Webtoons. Give our listeners an idea of what it's all about.
So, Lore Olympus is a modern day deconstruction of the myth about Hades and Persephone. And also other Greek mythology.
Yeah, and when I was getting prepared for this interview, I read some previous interviews that you had given, and I saw one where you mentioned from a very early age, and I'm sure this has to do with your parents. You said that, you know, they would always read, right, encouraging that. But I read in this interview that you said from a very early age you were fascinated by Greek mythology and the gods and all these myths. Is there a particular reason that the like Greek mythology grabbed onto you? Like, where did that interest kind of spring from?
I feel like there's a couple of answers to that. And I feel like one of those answers, I'm going to talk about Disney's Hercules, the elephant in the room. So that was not my first encounter with Greek mythology, obviously, but it was one where I think I was like 11 years old when I went to go see it at the movies, and I really enjoyed it. Like, I really loved the art style, and I just thought it was really funny. I still think it's really funny. A lot of people ask me about it and what I think about it, and I'm like, yes, it's not correct, but do you really want Greek mythology to be correct for young children? Like, there's this whole like element of like, oh, Hera isn't his mother, and I'm like, well, how are you going to dance around that for a show for children?
Yeah,
so that was where I was introduced to it, when I was young, basically if I was like interested in anything, like if I watched a movie I enjoyed, I would then go on to do more research about it. Now, at this stage, I believe it was like, I think it was around about this time we got our first computer that had the internet at home. Mm-hmm. So this was like my first kind of, you know, when you realize that there's fandoms and you can like go online and meet people who draw fan art. So this was like my first like thing where I was like, oh, I can meet a community of people who like the same things as me and have drawn fan art of this thing. Hooray. So there's that element. Now, the other thing that I think is worth commenting on is I feel like Greek mythology and the stories that it has actually has a major influence on most media and the way that we consume today and the way that we need to think about it. Is that if you look at the Roman poet Ovid, right? So he's written a lot of poems, right? And like, obviously, if you look at his work and then his influences on like William Shakespeare's work, which, you know, it's his poetry is brought up often within William Shakespeare's work. And then furthermore, William Shakespeare's works are kind of like the cornerstone to a lot of stories that we have now. I think that's a good way of looking at it. It's like, it's ubiquitous, it's everywhere, and you can't really avoid it.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, that's part of the reason that we still study it, right? I mean, it's still taught in high school and college because it's such a root for, at least for Western storytelling. So
for sure.
The stories have, you know.
I think that it's one of those things where we look at it and it's completely different, but it's still the same.
Yeah.
Like there's things there where you're like, this is completely different. We would never do this now in regards to like morals or values or whatever. But some of it is so human and still the same, and it's relatable. And I think, you know, is that there, that dynamic there that, you know, is what makes it so compelling to us as humans.
Yeah, and there's so much tragedy in Greek myth, too. I always feel like there's that
aspect. Oh, for sure.
People love to stop and watch a train wreck or a car accident. It's kind of the same way with Greek mythology, right? We're like, oh, thank God that's not me having... She's my own mother.
For sure.
Or whatever. So, I wanted to ask you though, why specifically the myth of the abduction of Persephone? What was it about that myth that inspired you to kind of create your own telling of that story?
This is like another dual answer situation. So I think, oh God, I just lost my train of thought. In saying that, but for one thing, with particularly with a modern lens right now, I think the way that we enjoy media, and it's really popular right now, is looking at villains and their side of the story, or like not necessarily villains, but like, you know, your anti-heroes or antagonists. You know, people are fascinated with why they do what they do, and you know, it's changed a lot from the past where we were like, this is the good guy, this is the bad guy, it's very black and white, and now it's very much grayscale. Even if you look at things like, I don't know, Wicked, Maleficent, The Shape of Water, which is like that movie that comes sort of like the monster love story where the female protagonist falls for the monster instead of who might be the hero. I don't know, Shrek. Like, you know, we want to know what's up. We want to know why they did what they did. And that's very, it's a very popular lens to look through at the moment. And that being said, like, we'll talk about this probably like later on, but like, obviously, I wouldn't say Hades is a villain, and I know there's like, I can feel like keyboard being touched right now, but we'll talk about it later. No, get your hands off the keyboard. The other thing is like, obviously, like, it's kind of a sexy story. You gotta admit, it's kind of sexy. Like, obviously, it's very problematic for me to say that. But, like, I think, you know, for people who enjoy that genre, like, I'm just going to call it, like, the Dark Lord Sexington genre because, you know, let's not dance around it. Like, there's something very appealing about someone being like, you're going to be my dark bride and do my dark bidding. I think, yeah, that whole situation is very popular.
Yeah, it is. And you know, that kind of leads
the whole genre.
Yeah, it is really interesting, and I think that there is some artistic merit to it, and it's as you said, you know, you're looking through a different lens. Now, of course, in today's lens of, you know, in our current societal climate with the Me Too movement and everything, and it's like, you want to be careful and you want to be sensitive, but at the same time, this is a myth, it is part of our history, it is a, you know, a retelling, and you're right, there is some aspect of wanting to examine these people that have a different view of, you know, whatever you want to label them, villain, antagonist, you know, whatever. It's a way to be relatable. It's a way to kind of broaden our perspective. And I think there's so much value in stories that give us a different point of view, you know, looking through the lens of a certain situation from the opposite of what you yourself might feel. And it's kind of a way to, you know, examine ourselves, and you know, you could try to put yourself in someone else's shoes and be more open-minded. I think it makes us all more well-rounded people. But when you started this comic early 2018, that was kind of right in the midst when Me Too was really taking off. Did you ever consider that this might be affected by that at all, or looked at through that lens of Me Too and where we are now in society?
Okay. So I started, this is like a difficult one to answer, but I feel like this is something like, especially for me, is like, obviously, like, I'm very feminist, and that sort of stuff really matters to me. I'm probably, the best way to approach this question is to say, like, so I began, right, like, the pilot for this was written sort of mid-2017. Mm-hmm. And I think what I wanted to achieve, and I'll never know if this is, like, probably in 5 years' time, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this, but I'm going, like, I'm taking the risk. And I was like, I really want to write a story where, like, this female character goes through these things. And I think what I wanted to achieve was, like, it's really common. Like, I can't speak for, like, men, but I can definitely speak, you know, if you're sitting, like, in a group of, like, your female friends and you're like, hey, who's been sexually assaulted? Mostly it's going to, the response is going to be really depressing. Like, it's going to be, like, most female people that you know who probably experienced sexual assault on one level or another. And, like, for me, I'm like, why is that? You know, why? And is it because, you know, there's, like, a lack of information, lack of education? Like, what is it? And I'm lucky enough to have a platform, and I'm like, if I could just provide some information in story format, would that help? Is this what I can contribute? So I feel like, especially with rape and sexual assault in media, often it's used as a way for, like, the main male character to be, like, uplifted to hero-ness by using, like, usually, like, violence is a way to fix the problem, and, like, that's not the approach that I want to take. I think... Oh, God, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. Yeah, I think a lot of the time in movies when they, like, show a rapist or something, is generally someone who's, like, jumped out from behind a tree, a lady at a park, and it's not really how it is, like, 90% of the time. So I'm like, I just want to make something realistic where people can look at it and be like, hey, like, nagging someone into sex isn't cool, or, like, removing all of their opportunities to say no isn't cool, or for someone to look at it and, like, you know, just feel validation. Like, this is me, like, trying my best to, like, make a difference with the platform that I have. And I think, yeah, that's my roundabout answer for it.
So it's almost like coming at it from exactly the opposite of what I thought. It wasn't like you came up with this idea for the story and then it kind of coincided. You were almost creating it in the same time. It was almost the zeitgeist of what was going on, and you felt like, well, this fits in perfectly with the story I'm trying to tell, because it's just like what I was talking about giving people different perspectives and different points of view, and you hope overall – then it kind of broadens everybody's consciousness is what you're trying to say, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, and it's like, it's one of those things where for some people it's very ambiguous for them, and, you know, that's really interesting, and I think it's good to open up a dialogue for especially, like, young readers to, like, sit and have a think about it and, like, process it. Like, honestly, when some of those chapters came out, like, there was, like, very, very long, long discussions that happened with lots of varying points of view. And I was like, wow, there are so many varying points of view on it, and it's very, very interesting. But I think, you know, it's a positive to, like, have it out there to create this dialogue.
Right. Now, beyond that, sort of heavy theme that you're trying to explore, what were some of the others? I mean, obviously you must be a romantic at heart, because you yourself even mentioned you'd not seen Hades as a villain, and there's, you know, that whole aspect of you know, wanting to be swept up off your feet and you know, fall so madly for somebody. So there had to be some aspect of that that you wanted to explore as well, right?
Yeah. So I guess, like, if we're going off into, like, themes and stuff now, like, one of the main themes of the comic is marriage, even though it sounds, like, really corny. But it's sort of, like, exploring, like, new beginnings of marriage, how, like, different types of marriages, how some marriages don't work, different sorts of ways of caring for each other, that type of thing.
And that's, I find that interesting as well, because it gets into the idea of, we see right away in this story, everybody's on the outside looking in at the relationship between Hades and Persephone, and everybody has an opinion, right? Everybody's like,
yeah,
not right for each other, and how could she be with him? And I find it so relatable in a way, because I think a lot of us probably in our own families have at times been with one person or another that our families may not have approved of, and everybody, oh, why are they with them? And I always find it so fascinating that unless you're one of the two people in the relationship, you really don't have any idea of what the dynamics of the relationship are. That's something that's really interesting to explore as well, right?
Yeah. I think if we're going to talk about fourth material, I think Hades is a very interesting and intriguing character. And I think it's because for a very, very long time, especially in Western culture, we sort of look like, we cannot help but look at things with, like, you know, Christianity, because it's kind of just everywhere. So I think for a very long time, a long, 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 long time, people were like, yes, Hades is the equivalent to Satan, so bad guy. And it's like, well, no, that's not correct. It's not correct at all. If they were going to have, like, I don't know, a rap sheet, I feel like Zeus is a lot worse than Hades, actually. But I think that is what makes Greek gods fantastic and fascinating, is because they, you know, are very, very human, and they experience jealousy, they're petty, they do things because they're so happy, they do things because they're really upset. But yeah, Hades himself, I think, is difficult to explain, because he's not an equivalent to Satan, so he's not bad in that way. However, he does have his own problems within Greek culture, where he is still terrifying, because obviously the Greeks are not familiar with our phenomenon of being, like, super interested in bad guys, and they don't want to hear about death, and they don't want to, like, invoke the wrath of Hades at all. So, you know, he has lots of different names. He's known as, like, the unseen one, rather than actually saying Hades, because they're like, we don't want him to, like, look at us or notice what we're doing. For the most part, I think what's interesting about him is he's, like, quite fair and mostly, like, fairly passive in terms of, like, Greek mythology, until you do something to fuck him off or take his stuff, and then he is like, no, you're done.
Now you're done.
Very strict on that policy.
Now, when you started telling this story, did you find that to be the case, that a lot of people weren't necessarily, or they had preconceptions about Hades? You found that to be the case with readers? Did you kind of, was that an obstacle that you felt like you had to kind of overcome in the storytelling?
Actually, no, for the most part. Like, most people really, I think, part of, like, the success is, like, people are really interested in Hades, and there's, like, a lot of people who, like, want to see Hades have a story where he's, you know, accurately portrayed. Again, this sort of circles back to the whole Disney thing where, like, the Hades, and that was a very naughty Hades, and people are like, I enjoy this, not accurate, kind of thing. So, yes, I think for the most part, people are like, yes, give me hands.
Yeah, that I find that to be very interesting. I mean, well, it's James Woods, so, you know, you automatically got a...
Oh, he was very good. Very, very charismatic.
Yeah, he that was a great role. He was perfectly...
for sure.
Perfect voice casting there. So, but yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because I find that to be the case a lot of times with historical figures, and I know we're kind of stretching it to say historical figure, a Greek myth. It's not somebody that
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Existed, but yeah, a lot of times historical figures, they're canonized or they're demonized for, aspects of what they've done. But that's, like you yourself said, we're so interested in the gray now instead of the black and white. And, when you're telling stories for the most part, and these gods are reflective of us as humans, and we're complicated people. We're never as bad as our worst day, and we're never as good as our best day. And so it's possible to be both. I don't think anybody should be canonized or demonized. And there's always, when you're telling stories in fiction, there's always that that temptation to whitewash things. And then you've got the people coming out of the woodwork saying, what about all this other stuff? It's like, it's a story, and you have to take it for what it's worth. But so I'm glad to hear that people are interested in Hades beyond.
Yeah, I think like one of the things is Greek mythology doesn't have a dogma at all, and so I think that's probably, if I was going to get into sort of issues that I face, is there's no dogma, and so I think people have a basic understanding of Greek mythology, and it doesn't go much further than that. And I haven't studied classical studies outside of high school or anything like that, so I'm not the super best person on the planet or the most eloquent, but one of the things is obviously what we understand, what ancient Greece was huge, and it went for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But obviously they don't have a Wikipedia page where they're okay guys, remember to check the wiki and all the facts about this, so we can all be really consistent. What you've got is obviously cultures that predate Greece, so Egypt and a few other groups. So there's gods that were acquired from other cultures prior to the Greek mythos, if you will. For example, there's heaps of different versions of Dionysus. There's also things to I've heard before that Persephone herself was kind of looked at the giver of all life, so she was the one goddess who created everything. Another thing that's really important to realize is obviously the values of a person living in Athens are going to be very different to the values and wants and needs of a person living in a farm off the side of Crete.
Right.
So one of the things is, in some of around Crete, Persephone was sort of looked at, Persephone and Hades, their marriage was actually a divine marriage, and that's what it was looked at as, and that's how they were worshipped. And Persephone was a goddess that you would pray to if you were getting married. So, they were really important, and a lot of people, this myth is kind of split. So part of the myth is about Demeter trying to retrieve her daughter, and the other part of the myth that people focus on is Persephone being a bride, and also that cycle between life and death. So Hades gives the people of the world Persephone so that she can bestow her bounty onto them, so on and so forth.
Yeah, are you specifically going to kind of explore that aspect? Have you thought about exploring that aspect in the story itself, the kind of that cycle of life and death? Not we don't want to get spoilery, but I'm just curious.
Yeah,
the general term.
I think what's what is noteworthy is I write those two characters as two opposite ends of one spectrum, and they kind of balance each other out and complement each other. And I think the way that I write them is that they're both shoehorned into, I'm going to say stereotypes or their social conventions around the community that they live in. So Persephone kind of lives with this pressure of being very good all the time, very well behaved all the time. She's got her job that she has to do, and that's her job for all eternity. So she's kind of struggling with the monotony of that. And then on the opposite end, we've got Hades and everyone. I realize we discussed before that Hades is not the devil, but he still has, all these a lot of preconceived notions in their community about him that she is kind of shoehorned into the corner with. And they can both appreciate that struggle in each other and like kind of just enjoy each other's company. So that's how I write them, is they can sort of understand each other's woes.
Yeah, they do complement each other. And I think in that way, it's not so far-fetched as you get into the story to see these two. I mean, it's the old cliche, right? Opposites attract. There is a lot to that. And these characters do complement each other. And they're so different in their demeanor and kind of the way they relate to other people. But you can honestly see how much they really care about each other. And you can kind of understand it, at least from my perspective anyway.
Yeah, like fundamentally they're the same.
Now listen. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, don't worry.
I wanted to ask you about your art style. It's so unique, especially the color work. It's sort of primary, and I feel like it's the color work is what sets the mood so well. Oftentimes, when I'm talking about sequential art, I compare the color work to kind of the background music in a visual medium, like a movie or a TV show, where it can affect the mood without you even kind of realizing it. So, and there's also in your line work a very kind of mod retro feel. Whenever he's in his office, I always get that madman vibe, which I think is really great. So, I wanted to ask you if that was a kind of that retro chic was kind of the tone you were going for, and also how you developed the style specifically for Lore Olympus.
Okay, so I guess like it's always such a difficult question, right? Like how did you arrive at your style? Because you're like, it's everything that I have ever done in my whole life, and now I'm here at this point. Like, obviously, I really like manga and anime and things like that, but I also really like Mary Blair from Disney. And her, like, if you're not familiar with Mary Blair, just for anyone who's listening, you can just look at, like, the early Disney concept work for, like, Alice in Wonderland or Peter Pan or Cinderella. So it's all sort of, like, very bold, very brushy, sort of very gestural. And that's how a lot of like the ideas are communicated. In terms of me and color, it's interesting because I've never thought of myself as being very good with color. And I think the addition of color to Lore Olympus was actually a last minute decision where prior to I thought it was going to be all in grayscale. Which is so funny to me now that I like the concept of it being in grayscale now. I think what I do with the colors is I really limit myself with them, so it makes it easier to decide what to do because I feel like I'm actually not very good with colors. But I think I chose those two colors in the beginning, like the pink and the blue, because they're very like complementary, and I was like, oh, these are like my two favorite colors to draw together. So these will be the colors of these characters. So that's kind of how I arrived at that. And I feel like a lot of the storytelling and moods are communicated with those colors now. Like there's a lot of things that I don't think I could actually draw. I actually have to use the colors to show like the ambience or mood of it. And it's funny that you bring up that Mad Men because I love that series. I watched it once in like my mid-20s and then again last year, and it's still like it's so funny. I mainly enjoy like the office shenanigans and like kind of like that outrageous sexism and stuff like that. It's pretty entertaining.
See, it just goes to show that as a creator, it's so important to still consume other creations because it all comes together. It all influences style.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's really awesome. You mentioned earlier about looking back at the kind of the early episodes of Lore Olympus and almost kind of being, oh, that wasn't not that good, kind of flinching at. So you definitely feel that you've improved and your style has evolved since you've started this.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel like when I first started drawing Lore Olympus, I was like, I don't really know how to draw men, and I don't really understand how their legs work. So I'll just make a comic with, like, the main character is, like, a dude, and I'll be sweet. So I'll be fine. But I think, like, obviously, like, I've learned a lot about, like, because basically, like, how I'll talk about, like, my own personal experience with webtoons. So obviously, this is nothing that you can't read on the website. If anyone's interested in looking, is they've got kind of like a flowchart or set of information. So I was in the Discover section, which is available for everybody. Anyone can use the Discover section. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll just put my thing here. That'll be sweet. And I remember I got like 6 comments and I was like, sweet, 6 comments. Which is really funny now. But I think, oh, God, I think the first chapter that I did was like, 6 frames long, and I remember being like, I don't know how people make like a whole chapter a week. I don't know how they do it, but it's sort of like, I was like, I'm gonna give myself a personal challenge and just like try and update this thing once a week, no matter how long or short the chapter may be. But I feel like, you know, obviously if you're drawing every day, you're going to improve, like your idea of what, how to pace a story out is going to improve. Obviously, a lot to do with, like, comics is, like, how your ability to, like, reveal information in each frame is, like, part of storytelling, and you're going to improve on that as you go. But, yeah, I look at, like, the first 3 chapters, and I desperately want to remake them, but at the same time, I'm like, well, this is what they were at the time, and you're just going to have to accept that and be okay with that because it's part of the learning process.
So was there, did the evolution and the learning, did it all happen by trial and error kind of organically? Or was there at one point when it maybe started to take off where you're like, wow, I really need to maybe focus on this technical aspect? And did you go and seek out any other resources in order to improve? Or was it all just kind of trial and error?
I feel like it's a little from column A and a little from column B, to be perfectly frank. So I'm a very much a trial by fire person. So I'm like, oh, I hate, because prior to this, like a lot of my projects, I've spent a lot of time basically like mucking about and being like, oh, but it's not where I want it to be. And it's not, you know, I don't have the skill set that I want to have, you know, all that stuff. And I'm like, look, just make it, just do it. It's fine. Don't plan it, just do it. But like, obviously that's not fantastic advice. You should plan a little bit, but I will, especially in the beginning, I was like, just put it in there, like especially with like the pilot. So this is like back when I was on Discover, I would never write a script first, and I'm like, are you nuts? And it's just I think it's all part of like the learning process. Like, you kind of just have to do something to work out what you need to do to make it, which sounds totally stupid, but like, you get what I mean. Like, you just have to find out what works for you and do it. So yes, in the beginning it was very sort of like experimental, and I was like, does this work? This doesn't work. So on and so forth. Even down to things like learning what size to make like the typeface, and just like learning how to plan. It's all a process. So when I moved from Discover to Featured, I got like so they'll give you like an editor who will help you, and like obviously an editor is a fantastic thing to have because obviously they can like look at it and like help you with the pacing, because prior, when I was learning about making comics, because I'm self-taught, I think most people are self-taught, really. I kind of used to struggle so much. I was like, how do I get, like, this person from point A to point B? Like, how do I do it? Like, how do I do a transition? I don't know. And I used to think that you had to kind of draw every single movement, and you don't need to do that. But there are, like, things that you can do that will communicate something very quickly to a reader. And that's where like the editors are super helpful, and they'll be like, just draw a frame with this, and you're like, thank you, you helped me so much. And like, obviously, like I try and do a lot of research, and obviously by like looking at other comics and seeing what works and what doesn't work, it's always very helpful. And yeah, again, when I was like moving to Featured, I was like, well, this is it. Make it work. You make it work moment.
Yeah,
and I feel like every time I make a chapter, I'm like, okay, this is it. Make it work. Each chapter should be an improvement, or I try to make it an improvement anyway. Sometimes it's easier said than done, though.
But you know what? Those hard learned lessons, those lessons taught from or learned from your own experience, are the ones that you remember the most. There's no substitute for experience.
Oh yeah.
And one thing that's certainly very clear, and you know, Discover on Webtoons is one tool. In order to get out there and start making comics. And there's, you know, so many people that are trying to break in, and it can be a small industry. And the overwhelming advice that I hear from creators who I talk to is that if you want to be a comic creator, the most important thing to do is to make comics.
You know, yes, do the work.
Yeah, just put in the work. And honestly, if you're using, I need to figure out how to pace correctly, or to script correctly, or do this or that, and you're spending all your time trying to learn technique and using that as an excuse not to actually start, then that in a way that's a detriment. There's no excuse for just getting in there,
yeah,
putting
in. You can definitely get in your own way, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder, we both mentioned Discover. It's the side where you can go to Webtoons and you can, you know, put in the work there. You don't have an editor, but there are other support systems in there, and yeah, you can really learn a lot. What was it when you decided to do Lore Olympus, or your previous project, that attracted you to Webtoons? Why did you choose Webtoons specifically?
Okay, so I've been making sort of I've been dabbling in failed projects for like the thick end of a decade on the internet. So I think one of my first comic projects, sorry, just a little bit of history here, a little bit of background. One of my first ones, I used Keenspace. I believe it was Keenspace. And it was that very standard, like, sort of print to web sort of transition where you, like, had a page, like an A4 page. It was a standard A4 comic page. And you'd have, like, your next, previous, first type of arrangement tabs going on there. So that was like my first comic, and that's how you did it. And then I believe there was like alternatives, like I think it's like SnackJeeves and stuff like that. And that was about it. That was like how you did it back in the day. And you'd be like, yep, I update my comic once a week, once a month, one page kind of thing. And then later on, like, I mean, obviously there's like Tumblr and DeviantArt and all of that sort of thing. And it's kind of like, it's really hard to find a place to find, like, even when I was making previous projects, I was like, this feels so lonely. Like, because, yeah, you can post your comic onto like Tumblr, or you can make your own website, but like, you and I both know, it's really difficult to make someone go to your specific website these yep. days. Like, it kind of has to be built into, like everyone, like, I know everyone's like, Facebook, but I'm like, everyone's still on Facebook or Twitter or, like, all these shared networks. So, yeah, it can feel, like, if you're posting your comic to, I don't know, Tumblr, like, you have to find that percentage of people who are actually interested in looking at a comic in the first place. And then you've got to find the next step. Are they interested in looking at your comic?
Yep.
Is that? So this is where I think I came across, I think I found Webtoon because, like, I really like, this'll make you laugh, but I'm like super into horror. I love horror. And I found like some really excellent horror comics, and then I found they were hosted on Webtoon, and I was like, oh my goodness. And there was heaps there, and I was stoked. And then from there, I started reading all the sort of featured comics that I had there that were romance comics. And I was like, look at all these romance comics. There's so much. It's so good. And then I realized that, like, it was free and it was easy to use. I really, really like the format. Like, I really appreciate the format because I haven't had, like, a great history with like print-based media, and I just always found like very often, like, to get your work published, a lot of time, like, you don't even get money. Like, it's just no money. Yeah. Like, who has the money? And I'm sure anyone who's like dealt with like print-based media will know the struggle. They're just like, yes, I got a piece of artwork and a book, but I'll probably like never get any money from doing it. That's like my experience. But with using Webtoon, it was kind of like there's no limits on what you can draw, just as long as it's scaling up and downwards. Like, I could draw a dumb face, a variation of a dumb face, 10 times, and it's not going to be like this no page limit, which I really like, because I want to draw a lot of dumb faces. You know, like, it's just, it just lets you do and explore like this whole new type of storytelling that isn't limited to print-based media. But yes, it's free, and it's just, it's super easy to use, and it's kind of got this built-in community already, which is super handy. So you're getting lots of eyes on your work, just as long as you're like updating on a regular basis, which is super handy. Like I said, when I uploaded my first chapter, I was like, yes, 6 people, you know, saw it and liked it enough to like leave comments, which to me was like outrageous at the time. Like, I just like, it blew me away. But yeah, and so, and you know, as a company, they're really cool because they're always looking for people. Even if you aren't in the features section, they're always looking for a way for people to like earn money for their digital work that they've put online, which I think is really cool.
So it sounds like you certainly would recommend Webtoons for and the Discover, you know, aspect of it, because it is free and there is support there and it's easy to use. So it sounds like you would definitely recommend it for someone looking to break into comics. But I wonder, do you feel digital comics, creating digital comics in general, is a good way for aspiring creators to try to get their work out there to be seen, even if they want to eventually work, you know, maybe their dream is to work on Batman or Spider-Man. Would you even consider digital comics to be a foot in the door, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to like begrudge digital, traditional media or anything like that. But I think one of the, you know, beauty of the internet right now is that everyone has access to having a platform where people are going to see their work. You don't have to like wait to get permission from another human being to say that your work is valid. Like, you can just be like, you know what? Fuck it. My work's good. Here it is. Look at it. Like, you don't, like, there's no kind of, like, for that, like, I mean, obviously this is a sweeping statement, but there's like no gatekeeping or anything like that. Like, you can just be like, here it is. And if there's a group of people that, you know, your work appeals to, if there's like a market for it, then you know, if you're good, you're good, and you're going to get there.
Yeah,
and you're not you're not limited to someone telling you that it's okay.
Yeah, the cream rises to the top, and if you could just get your work out there in front of people's eyes, it's kind of like they will find you. You can't go knocking on Marvel's door and say, "I want to write Spider-Man."
Get
your work out there.
I've got some ideas. Yeah. Here I am. Yeah. and I think it's really important for, you know, and I feel like the thing about the web and like the difference between print and web, and I've worked in print for sure, like I've like made magazines and stuff like that, is if you mess up in print, it's such a mare. Like, if you make a typo, you're done. You're just like, no, and everyone's going to see it through. But if you make like a typo on the internet, you can go back and fix it. And I think that's great. And I think, especially if you're starting out, regardless of digital, traditional, or whatever, I mean, obviously, if you're going to be like an artist in general, even if your work is traditional, eventually, if you want people to look at it, you're going to have to scan it and get it on the computer somehow and put it on the internet. Like, that's the end game, right? Unless you just want to sit in your home surrounded by your own paintings and be like, yes, fantastic. But yeah, I think it's really important to just get out there, make those mistakes, learn what doesn't work. That's really important. You need to like get over this whole concept of things being perfect, because perfect is boring. You shouldn't aim for that, I think. People sort of look at the volume of work that's out there and get they feel intimidated. But I'm like, no, everyone has like a right to some space. They have the right to make work. And, you know, even if it's not perfect, because my work is like far from perfect. I mean, so many things I could change to make it better, but it still appeals to people and it makes people happy. So that's really cool. And, you know, you should just do it. And like, even like the most popular stuff is like, it's kind of wacky and it may not be like technically like the best, but it makes people feel really good when they look at it, you know? So you should give yourself that chance and just have a go.
Yeah, from what I know from the Webtoons creators that I've had the opportunity to interview for the show or meet in person at various conventions, it's a really great community too. Everybody really seems to enjoy each other's work and kind of pull for each other and give each other advice. You know, the people that are starting out will, you know, kind of pick the brains of those who've been doing it for a while, and it's such a great atmosphere, kind of a almost a family feel amongst the creators.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Are there any specific favorite titles on Webtoons that I'll give you a chance to call out that you're reading on a weekly basis?
So I read my friend Jimmy Yoshioka's work. She writes a comic in the Discovered section called Circuits and Veins. So that's one that I make sure I read regularly. I try to read through all the ones that are in the Featured section to see what's it, have a little nose around. I'm trying to think of like my favorite one, probably from the Featured section. I should probably talk about more and Discover, actually. I feel like that's more fair. A woman that I know online just made one that's got like a couple of episodes out now called Young Blood, which is about teenagers, which is the artwork's beautiful, so that's fairly promising. But yeah, there's new good ones coming out all the time, and I always make sure to have a look and see who's coming out. No, what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's certainly, both in the Featured and the Discover section, there's no shortage of genres. I mean, there's Western, superhero, horror, romance, manga. I mean, it is all there. No matter what you're looking for in terms of sequential stories, you can find on Webtoons. And it's free. You cannot beat the fact that all this content is out there for free.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I love is, like, the accessibility of it.
Yep.
Because obviously, like I really, really like for, like, younger people to be able to read my work. And obviously, sometimes younger people, like, don't have the funds.
Yeah, but you can read it on your phone. You can read it on a tablet, laptop, desktop. It's definitely one of the best aspects of it. And the other thing that I like about it is, you know, it's free for us to read. And there's some times where you're getting something free from creators on a certain platform, and that means the creators aren't being fairly compensated. And having done the comics journalism thing for so long now and seeing creators struggle, that always kind of bothers me. So I love the facts that Webtoons has managed to make a platform that's free for the consumers, but they have competitive page rates if you're on the Featured section. And creators are being fairly compensated for their work. That's very admirable, and it makes it impossible for me not to support this this platform. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, they're great to work for. Like, they're a really lovely bunch of people. I'm really lucky.
Well, Rachel, I really want to thank you for your time. I love learning this. Takes me back to my days in college of studying Greek mythology, and it's I love the madman chic retro feel as well. And I have to say, I only discovered it recently, and I didn't cringe when I read those early chapters. I have to tell you, they're just as enjoyable in the beginning as your more recent work. So don't feel that you need to go back and redo them.
Thanks.
If any of our listeners want to follow along social media, that way they'll know when you put out new episodes, and if you have any other projects coming up, where's the best place online to follow you and your work?
So what do you think? So most of like my Twitter and Instagram and Facebook are under the Edgelord name, Use Band-Aid, because it is a handle that I came up with when I was in university, and I'm like, oh, I can't change because I've been making art forever. But yes, it's under Use Band-Aid. But if you're looking at Laura Olympus on Webtoon, at the bottom of every chapter, there'll be links to all of my social networky places. Yeah.
Great. And listeners, there will be a link to the Webtoons Lore Olympus page in the show notes if you want to go and check it out, which I highly recommend that you do. You can just look down in the show notes, check it out, and click there. So, Rachel, again, I really want to thank you for your time, for joining me from many, many time zones away, actually coming to us from the future. It's Thursday in New Zealand, right?
It is.
Only Wednesday here, so. It was great to chat with you. Best of luck with Lore Olympus, and hope our listeners go and check it out.
Okay, thank you so much. See ya.